KBXC Film Brain Trust here today. You may remember us earlier this year. We did an Oscar special, and now we're reuniting to talk about kind of a big year for films, 1976, as part of the 50th anniversary of KXC. So
it was such a momentous year.
It sure was, in every way.
Yeah.
So maybe let's all introduce ourselves. I'm Andrew DeZingle. I'm a producer here at KAXE.
I'm Heather Johnson. I'm the membership coordinator here at KXE KBXE.
And I'm Julie Crabb, and I'm a volunteer here.
And the pop culture.
Oh, mom of pop culture, I've been called. But that's why I keep you young ones close to my heart, so you can tell me what's going on.
So, Julie, you said you've seen quite a few of the movies that we're about to talk about today. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, what was the movie-going experience like in 1976?
It was big. There was lots going on politically and in the country, and there was a lot of fraught situations going on the year before, the years following, and this was just an explosion of those kind of reflections of our American society at the time, and I did see every one of these movies in the theater.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Everyone. I mean, I've been seeing movies, every single thing I could see, for since I was about 17. So these movies were way ahead of its time. And if I may say, really prescient to today's experiences in movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and in society. So it's a real reflection of what may come, too. So that's my experience. And when I went to the movie, it was an event that I dressed for. And settled in for. I didn't eat a whole lot of movie candy because I was too busy watching.
Popcorn?
Popcorn, yes. Extra butter, please, even though it's not butter, I know.
It's close enough.
It's oil.
Well, and I also think it's interesting about this time. So New Hollywood is in full swing.
Mm-hmm.
The Francis Ford Coppolas, the William Friedkins, the Sidney Lumets, Martin Scorsese's, they've all started making their first movies and are starting to make a splash. And then the year before this, Jaws happens, which is about to change
everything.
And then the next year is Star Wars, which is also going to change
everything.
So we're at that, like, right before Hollywood goes into full blockbuster mode.
Which is one reason, and we will talk about this, is why I'm very, very happy that you included The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, because that one I had to find at a little teeny theater off campus. And it was John Cassavetes who rejected the Hollywood that was to come and the big Hollywood pictures that were before. And I think it says everything. It was a flop, but it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing how well that one holds up today. So, but we'll get dive deep into that one later. So kind of for you, the listeners at home, we are going to focus on a few movies we think were important for 1976. And then we're going to talk about how the Oscars recognize these films. And then at the end of the show, we'll give a little shout outs to some other films that came out in 1976 that we're just don't have time to dive deep into. But you may be wondering, because you're going to notice that we're not doing any horror movies today, and that's because we are planning to reunite the KXC Film Brain Trust.
Very excited by this.
Me too.
In October for a look at the horror movies, because we got some big ones that came out in 1976. Yeah. We've got Carrie, we've got The Omen, and much more. All right, so let's dive into our 10 movies we're going to focus on. And I think the first one, pretty appropriate, All the President's Men, directed by Alan J. Pakula and starring Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. It's the story of Woodward and Bernstein going through the scandal for the Washington Post of the Watergate, basically.
So right.
Do we have any initial thoughts we want to go through for All the President's Men?
I'll start by saying that it's really not a movie about the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie about journalism and the bogging down, the journalistic things you have to go through to get to the story. The story is the result, but this is about the work that these two men did, and frankly, sometimes boring, with lots of characters along the way. And I think that's what I think about this movie. I think about that aspect of it, the working man's journalism. School.
Absolutely. And I think that it's kind of like, you know what happens. You know what actually happened in history, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself even, you know, while watching the movie, are they going to figure it out? What's going on? And I also agree with you that it's a little boring.
Uh-huh.
You know, it drags. And I feel like the first time I watched it, which was probably more than 20 years ago at this point, I was more excited by it. And then rewatching it, I was maybe just not the right mood. I was a little bit more disinterested.
It was, it really, really harps on the minutia.
Yeah.
That is journalism. And I watched it again when Robert Redford died. That was the first one I went back to just to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other thing I need to say about this, which reflects on its minutia, is the cigarette smoking of Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
And I don't think he ever smoked, but he's smoking on this 100% of the time.
Yep.
Heather, something you mentioned I kind of want to focus on in this movie too is just the idea that everyone who was going to the movies at this time knows how it's going to end because it made major news. And
right.
And I think that's, I don't know if this is the first movie to have done an event like this where it's a political thriller, but you already know how it ends. And so today we would get movies like The Post is mm-hmm. an example of basically doing what All the President's Men's doing. So I just want to shout out to All the President's Men for kind of being the first movie to be, you know what's going to happen, but it's about the journey. And that's the fascinating part to look at.
Right. And I mean, it was all over in people's living rooms. You know, they were talking about every aspect of it that was coming out in the news. So I feel like people at that time were intimately familiar with it, you know, and
we're
talking about it at work and everything. I don't know that we necessarily do that today with one news story to dive so in depth with it before something else comes and takes over the popular story of the day. And then we just kind of seem to forget about it.
I'm a political animal and I watched all the Watergate hearings because
mm-hmm.
I was carrying my first child who was also 50 years old. And it was riveting to me because of the whole atmosphere. So I was looking forward to see how did they do this?
Yeah.
How did they do this?
Yeah, and it's acted brilliantly, too. Mm. I just...
And not just Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. No. The whole supporting cast, I think, even these people that are in for maybe 2 minutes screen time are... There's no wasted moment of screen time.
That's exactly right. There's no wasted moment.
Ned Beatty. Former... Well, not neighbor, but lived within 10 minutes of me for
that's
a couple summers.
That's
in a
claim
row.
Worthy.
That's
and I
amazing.
Got to deliver lumber to his house.
No, I didn't know that. Oh my gosh.
And also Jason Robards, who played Ben Bradley. Yes, this was very well cast, succinct, to the point, and I think it's worth watching for everybody. So I would highly recommend anybody who hasn't seen it, and I dare say there's going to be a few.
Oh,
that
yeah.
they should.
And I also love in this movie, besides Robert Redford, everyone else is cast to look like people.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and exactly.
It
right.
makes me yearn for when movies used to do that, where everyone was like character actors in movies.
Yeah. Yes.
Where now everyone has to be beautiful looking.
Yeah, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our next movie we want to take a look at is sports classic Rocky. What are our initial thoughts on Rocky?
Weirdest love story ever.
And this is another one that we've heard the story before, way before Rocky and after Rocky. But this is about not necessarily the story, but the hero.
Yeah.
That's in every one of us, maybe, in every man. And I think Sylvester Stallone knocked it out of the park. Not my favorite actor, but boy... He should have gotten out of the business after this. This was fantastic.
What about Tango and Cash? Come on.
Well, I think it's so interesting about this movie is I think everyone has an idea of what a Rocky movie is. And I think they're thinking of what the Rocky series became in the 80s with Rocky 3 and 4.
You're absolutely right.
But the first one is such a new Hollywood influenced movie where it's just about the guy, not the boxer.
I read a quote here that I think is really good. It's like the continuation of when Marlon Brando says to Rod Steiger, I could have been a contender.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is the continuation of that thought, I think.
Mm-hmm.
these people aren't pretty, but they are so well developed, like the big palooka Rocky and, you know, his small timey jobs doing things for 40 bucks here, 20 bucks there, and his pets where he meets his soon to be wife.
I would also say Burgess Meredith, who I absolutely love. He was great in this.
Well, another strong cast of Burgess Meredith, Rocky Balboa, Talia Shire, and Carl Weathers as Apollo Creed.
Carl Weathers,
I think they're all doing a great job in this movie, too.
I absolutely do, too. And I particularly love Talia Shire because she comes from poor old Connie Corleone, which she did in 1972, and comes to this. And she also is exactly who we need in this movie. Mm-hmm. Her heart, her shyness, and the fact that she just loves him and what he's doing, and she supports him 100%. Also, we should mention Burt Young, who is her brother, who is just a jerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not giving him any passes for being so abusive, but that's the way things were back then, and I'm not saying it, making any comment on whether it's good or bad, but that's moves the story, you see.
Oh, yeah. And he plays it brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
It's so good.
And I would be remiss if we didn't mention the soundtrack. The Rocky theme is undeniable.
Undeniable.
And you can't help during the last big fight when the music just starts swelling
crescendo
up. No wonder people just were flocking to this movie.
And may I say that in the theater, we got to our feet.
Aww.
We did. I mean, everybody there, most people did get to their feet because it was so exciting. We were so with him. We were so behind him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we talk about this song when he's going up the steps of, is it the library?
Yes.
The public library? Mm-hmm. I did not realize that there were lyrics, or I had forgotten there were lyrics.
You're gonna fly now?
I started laughing so hard. But
oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's gonna fly now. And then there are just some other like really greeting card phrases that they throw in there. And I was rolling. I'm like, I forgot this had lyrics.
Our next movie I'm most excited about because it is my second favorite movie of all time.
Okay.
And it is a little satirical black comedy known as Network, which doesn't play as much as a comedy these days because all these things that are amped up as being absurd ideas have now become television. So
they have.
Again, with the prescience on what things are to become.
Yes.
And here's the thing that I think makes it so brilliant. It's by a screenplay by Patty Chayefsky. And Patty Chayefsky was so New York, so je ne sais quoi, I don't know how to put it, but he epitomized this. His screenplays and his plays were always very satirical, very dark, but with just a hint of nudge, nudge. So, yeah, I love this.
So, for people who may not know about Network, it's about a television network struggling with poor ratings, and one of their news anchors kind of has a breakdown on air, and it becomes sort of a hit with crowds, and so the network kind of starts pursuing sensationalism in their programming.
The outrage.
And outrage machine.
And again, another stacked cast. Faye Dunaway is amazing. William Holden. But then we also have Robert Duvall in a terrific supporting performance. Ned Beatty again.
Yep.
Beatrice Straight. And Peter Finch as the newsman.
/ madman.
Yeah. And just fantastic stuff. And the famous, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore speech. It's still affecting to this day.
You bet
amazing.
It is.
But there was so much good dialogue in this movie. There's so much good dialogue the entire way through that's not even the best line.
It's true.
It's just the most memorable one. And I had not seen it before. This was my reason to seek it out and watch it. And I loved it. I couldn't take my eyes off it. I just thought it was fantastic. The acting, even just the things like the coloring and the camera work, they were so subtle, but so perfect. The sets for the TV shows, they were great.
And you know, here's the thing I reflect on with, well, you know, maybe the last one we talked about too. It was succinct. It was less than 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to go or do more than what they did, tried to do, and they did it well. Like you said, the dialogue, we knew where this was going. It's really fantastic.
It is so good. And I will definitely be watching this one again because I feel like I'll notice more things the next time. It's so good.
The scene with William Holden and Faye Dunaway when they are basically breaking up as a couple, and William Holden's speech about, because the ending is a lot closer than the beginning for me, and death now has definable features. That scene I absolutely love in this movie. I think William Holden gives an all-time performance.
I agree with you 100%.
Which we'll talk more about in the Oscar race.
Well, and one of my other favorite scenes besides that one, the second favorite, is when they're in bed and they're making love. And she's talking about things that she might do to make the show say more, do more. We can see more while they're making love. Mm-hmm. I love that.
All right. Our next movie is the neo-noir psychological drama, pretty infamous one, Taxi Driver, directed by Martin Scorsese, starring a terrific Robert De Niro. And we also have Jodie Foster, Cybill Shepherd, Harvey Keitel, Peter Boyle, and Albert Brooks in this movie.
And Albert Brooks, yes. And Travis Bickle, his name is ubiquitous, but I think people that haven't watched the movie, and there's few and far between, it's not about that scene we have to see over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. It's about New York City as seen through the eyes of a kind of a loser and a man who's losing his sanity, a man who sees beautiful women and horrid politicians getting those beautiful women that he's never going to have. And he might go out to have a cup of coffee with one of them, but he's going to make the wrong move. And they're going to move away slowly like, he's crazy.
Well, another thing I think about this movie is that it seems to be a movie about
PTSD.
Like, yeah.
PTSD.
It's a movie about PTSD without ever actually saying it out loud.
I don't think they said it then.
They just give us little hints of what his backstory is that he was in the Vietnam War, but they only mention it because he's applying for his taxi license.
Right.
And they ask him, did you serve, kind of thing. And it just like these little hints throughout the movie of what is really the backstory of this guy without actually saying the backstory.
Right. And it's almost like he wants to redeem himself by being a hero now that he's back. You know, he wants to be responsible for saving someone. He wants to kind of make up for whatever happened.
I'm going to kind of disagree. Yep. Only in that I think what he was trying to do was make a statement. If that meant shooting a politician, so be it. But it didn't turn out that way.
Yep.
But see, he was prepared to go through it in a big way. Mm-hmm. And we see this, and I think that's important. In the end, he becomes a hero, and now the girl wants to have coffee with him again. That's so sad.
It also made me think of not necessarily the movie Joker, but people's reaction to when that came out of like, oh, we're going to have so many people idolizing this and imitating what they see in the movie. And it's like, they should have been more worried about Taxi Driver, I feel like, causing people to do stuff like this.
Right on the nose there, Andrew DeZingle. Yeah, it's true.
So it's just like the idea of watching this and then seeing Joker and being more worried about Joker it's laughable to me now.
It's laughable.
But an early Scorsese movie, and you can just tell the guy knows how to make a movie. He knows how to make an interesting character. The shots are amazing. There's scenes of the nightlife that just look so seedy.
But it is a seedy underbelly of New York City, where the strip clubs and the pimps, and which brings me to pimp number one. And that is, of course, Harvey Keitel, who is brilliant in that small scene we see of him. You know, it's an extended scene with Jodie Foster, but it's very, very uncomfortable, and rightly so, but he nails it. Mm-hmm. Nails it.
And we should talk about Jodie Foster just for being 14 years old, I think, in this movie. And I know it's not quite Robert De Niro that we know him as today, but still at that time, holding a scene with him, being 14 years old, it's amazing.
Well, and that's what I said to somebody else when we were talking about this movie, is that this is proof positive that Scorsese knows an actor when he sees one. Mm-hmm. And this proves, I think, beyond all shadow of a doubt, I don't think anybody's, you know, disagreeing with me here, that he is an incredible actor. And he showed it.
And the future Scorsese and De Niro had. It's amazing to see them. Oh, they had it so early on.
Absolutely. Jodie was actually 12.
Oh, my gosh.
She was 12 years old because she was, I believe, 11 in Freaky Friday.
Oh.
Which is crazy as well.
Well, there's another one who has the acting chops as well. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to disagree with any of that. Boy, the choices were there. And Scorsese met him. And these people acted their butts off. And it didn't feel like acting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I hate to have to say that because it's not acting.
And if you were ever to do like a film course on what was New Hollywood, I think Taxi Driver would be one you'd have to include.
I would agree with you.
As part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Wouldn't it be fun to create a curriculum?
I think about it all the time.
It would be. I should ask Jack Nekbar if he ever covered that. Yeah, it's super gritty, I would say. There's just such a...
Good word for
a
it.
A different, you know, it's not the gloss and the glamour, and then it gets really gritty. And then what happens, you know, Rocky 2, 3, 4? it's glossy again.
You are listening to a special presentation on the films of 1976 as part of the KXC 50th birthday, and we'll be back in just a bit to talk about more movies.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6!
Our next movie, we're going into the sports comedy, The Bad News Bears, which is about Walter Matthau as a washed-up ex-baseball player who becomes a coach for a youth baseball team of, again, a little bit of a ragtag group of children.
They can't hit. They can't run. They can't catch. They fall down. And I think this movie is brilliant. And people always go, no, I don't know this movie. I said, have you seen The Mighty Ducks? That's because The Bad News Bears came along.
Yeah. Yes. And what I really love about this movie, and this is a spoiler, so if you don't want to know the ending of Bad News Bears, please wait 3 minutes.
Okay.
But the ending of it where they don't win the big game, and the message of the movie is like, that's just fine. It was about playing. That was the fun part.
I think the movie is almost a little deeper than that. I like to find the depth, and I think it's here because it reflects even today the competitiveness of American society, and that it's the parents that are the competitors, not the kids.
Yeah.
And the parents are giving them all these mixed messages. Which, we're on it for this. We're a team. We're doing this. And yet each team plays to its strengths while excluding everybody else. And I think the beauty of this movie is they wrap that up in the last half hour of this movie, all of that, because the best scene in the movie is the other team's coach is Vic Morrow. His kid is the pitcher for the team, oddly enough, the Yankees. And he tells him to pitch one way on the mound, and he doesn't. And he comes and hits him on the mound in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. And so when the ball comes to him and a catch, he holds it. He doesn't throw it to get out the player. He holds it and looks in his father's eyes and throws it up in the air and catches it in his mitt. That is a beautiful scene.
It seems like such a snapshot of its time as well, where...
Oh, yes.
I think movies today would be afraid to portray either their coach this dark or just the whole society behind Little League Baseball being so dark and the kids being...
Yeah, the kids themselves, they sound like little grown-ups, first of all.
Well, they are what they see, you know?
Yep.
And I think that's the competitive part that makes me so... When I've gone to games, it could not be made today. It really could not be made today because they're still doing it in Little League games.
Yeah.
I've witnessed it. You know, they're trying to keep a lid on it, but it's still the parents that are getting involved in the kids' game.
And I... want to shout out Walter Matthau is
fantastic.
Just a terrific grump in this movie.
Yes, he is.
One of the all-time great grumps of our big screen.
Yeah. Exactly. And he played a grump in how many decades of movies, too? I mean...
Every one.
And Tatum O'Neill, this and Paper Moon, just... Aww. Even if those were the only two movies she ever made...
They were one.
She's such a terrific little precocious little girl.
Yeah, she is.
Paper Moon is so
and
good.
And so is Jackie Earle Haley, if yes. I may
yes.
say. He was in a recent movie as an adult, and I'll be darned if I can think of it, and I will later, but he hasn't grown much taller.
No, he hasn't, and he looks really pretty
basically
much
the same.
And when I saw him as a kid, I'm like, that can't be him, and so I had to look it up, and sure enough, it was
and
crazy.
He plays delinquent, fantastic, smokes, rides a little motorcycle. Yep.
Constantly getting harassed by the adults.
In the room, mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
Delightful movie.
A delightful movie. I recommend it highly. I think we all do, right?
Yep.
All right, coming up, this next one, I haven't seen this movie, so I'm going to let you two lead the conversation on this one.
Okay.
But I think it's worth talking about because it's the Western film, The Shootist, and it's John Wayne's last appearance in a movie.
I would never, ever proclaim to be someone who is really into Western movies, but I loved The Shootist. So maybe I don't know where my genres are.
Well, can you tell us, what is The Shootist about?
The Shootist is about an ailing, a dying, really...
Gunslinger?
Gunslinger, yeah, exactly. And he just kind of wants to live the rest of his life in peace, basically, is I think what the movie starts off saying.
Well, he doesn't have many days left, according to his doctor, James Stewart.
Yes. And of course, any appearance by Jimmy Stewart, you know, that makes it a better movie anyway. But so he moves into a room with a woman and her
son.
I think we could call him an adult son. I think he was an adult at that point. And just kind of hunkers down, and then he gets some unwanted attention from some people because he's this, you know, famous gunslinger, and it kind of evolves from there.
Well, in the Western Grapevine, you see, everybody knows he's sick, and they want to get a piece of him. Here's what I think about this movie, too, if I may say so, having watched, my dad's favorite actor was John Wayne, and he was a terrible actor. He really was. I've seen a couple of good movies, and this was one of them, because what he did is he played himself and the winding down of a career may or may not have been perfect. He never really wanted to be anything other than he was, as he said in the movie. He said, I don't want a piece of anybody, but I'm not going to lay down and die and have you walk all over me. Yeah. And he nailed that part. I think it's a dated movie, which of course it is because it's 50 years old. But I think there's some cliche there, but I think he really, maybe for the first time, found a voice for himself that reflected who he has been and that the door is closing.
Yeah.
And I think Lauren Bacall, the choice of her playing the housekeeper that has this lodge that houses him and her adult son who hero worships the guy.
Ron Howard,
of course, and he's not little Opie there.
No.
I think it's a fascinating look also in the new Hollywood is taking over, but there was still the overlap of John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart in movies while Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Dustin Hoffman's
we're nipping at their heels
are taking over kind of thing.
Yeah, I just, and I would agree that I never thought of John Wayne as really a watchable actor for me. It just wasn't my thing, but I really got pulled in by this movie.
I did too.
Yeah, and he's not a great actor, but he is a star.
He is a star, absolutely.
I think you're absolutely right. He was being himself in this, and he was, in fact, he'd had a lung removed, and he was dying of cancer at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, that made it seem more personal, I assume. But just all the interactions are, there's a lot of humor in this, which I think also makes it more palatable for me as somebody who isn't typically a Western fan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a very good story. The action is in just the right places. The reflection is in just the right places.
Mm-hmm.
And I so agree about Lauren Bacall. You know, it seems like a strange choice a little bit, but then when you see it playing out, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Our next movie, now Heather hasn't seen this one.
Oh.
And I'm not even a huge fan of this movie, but it was the second highest grossing movie of the year, so I think it's worth talking about. That is the 1976 and third version of A Star is Born, starring Barbara Streisand, Kris Kristofferson, and telling the classic Hollywood story, but in music, of one star's rise and the other one's fall.
I've been waiting to talk about this.
Okay, so can I tell you why I didn't watch it? I watched the previews and I watched some clips. And I had to pay for it. It wasn't streaming for free.
Copy.
And I said, no.
I just and you know what? It's okay.
No.
To me, I've seen every version. Mm-hmm. And I think the Gaga Cooper one wins.
Yeah, I think the Gaga Cooper one's the best of the four.
It is. And the close second is Judy Garland and James Mason. This one is the most mock-worthy. I'm going to tell you.
I should have watched it.
I really want you to watch it, Heather, because look, there's no chemistry between Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand. It's a washed-up alcoholic, finds this singer in a little cabaret, and thinks she's got talent. The next thing you know, they're married and living together, and Barbara's a star, and Kris Kristofferson is fading, and Barbara's a star, and she will not let you forget it.
Mm-hmm.
She is Barbara Streisand 100% in this movie until the very end, with her 8-minute performance, and Oh My Man, I Love Him So. That says it all about the movie. And here's the other thing. She takes him to her little apartment. She doesn't make much money, but boy, it was right out of Architectural Digest. I tell you what. And then and this is not a spoiler, but we are spoiling today. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you this because it's so ubiquitous in mine and my sister's household. When he dies, she walks into the house afterwards, and there's a tape recording playing him singing. And she goes, John Norman?
Oh.
Like, as if he's there, and I'm like, oh, my God. I roll my eyes. But I watched it, and I watched it more than 10 times.
Oh, wow.
That's what a true mockworthy is worth, where you can hone that mocking. So every time I go to my sister's, if she's home, I'll say, John Norman!
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, so now I feel like I should have watched it.
Well, the music's in it is really good. It like, is. The Kris Kristofferson songs, I absolutely love them.
I do, too, because he really nails it because it's who he is. He comes out of that industry.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He's smart, and he's already made movies. This guy is brilliant.
He is such a natural presence, and I wish he would have had, like, more movies under his belt.
May I recommend a movie that came out this year, that year, 76, The Sailor Who Fell from Grace from the Sea.
Okay.
Ooh. I highly recommend that. That's Kris Kristofferson.
All right. Now let's talk about our final movie. It is a crime film directed by John Cassavetes, starring Ben Gazzara. It is The Killing of a Chinese Bookie. It is a gritty film about a strip club owner who kind of gets basically forced into doing a killing for the mob.
I think it's a tour de force. It flopped at the box office, but it's because John Cassavetes was rejecting what we talked about before, the new Hollywood. He was part of his own Hollywood, the auteurs. He was always personal. He was always trying to figure out some fugitive truth about the way people behave. It's always in flux. It's always what are they, could they possibly be doing here? It was never about the actual story.
Yeah,
he was forced to do these things because he chose to.
Right.
He was $23,000 in debt. He had to.
And that's a really, really good point, because there's a lot that happens in this movie, but it still somehow feels like a small story because it's really, it's a character study, sort of. It's about him. That's really interesting. I would have never found this movie if we weren't talking about it. Movies of 76. And I absolutely loved it. It's so gritty and unexpected. The camera work is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and
but
even
not
though he's not an action director, there's action there.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of action. And, like, it's not ostentatious, but it's also, it is strangely beautiful to look at.
I agree.
And the story is also
strangely moving.
It is moving.
It's, and sad.
It's almost kind of sadly beautiful, too, though.
Yeah, like, I love the non-glamorous take that Cassavetes has on his characters of just,
yeah.
You never go away from one of his movies saying, like, well, why would a person do that kind of thing?
Uh-huh.
In his movies, every character's choice, even though it may not be the right choice, it makes sense for those characters who are doing it at that moment.
Absolutely.
Which I think is such a hard trick to pull in a movie.
And that's the other thing. Since when did humans make sense? I mean,
exactly.
I think he understood that because the movie he did before this, just before this, was Woman Under the Influence, where he directed his own wife, Jenna Rollins.
Oh.
And this shows his true brilliance. And he's coming off of that. And that did get some critical acclaim to this movie, where he uses some of the same ensemble he always had, people he hung out with. Ben Gazzara plays Cosmo, what is his last name?
Vitelli?
Yeah, Vitelli. And Seymour Casale,
yep,
who is a brilliant actor and played his sort of bookie counterpart. You know, that he had a club too, but he was kind of giving him advice on how to deal with this situation, if you will. But he was brilliant in it. It's a good movie. I say give it a chance. Not everybody will like it.
Yeah, and I can see why this wasn't a hit with the box office, but
with the greater public,
But man, it holds up.
I agree with you.
I think so too. Yeah,
I think we all totally can agree on that. I love that.
Yep.
You are tuned in to a special presentation on the films of 1976, part of the 50th birthday celebration of KAXE. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the Oscars for the films of 1976. All right, now we're going to take a look at the 1977 Oscars, where they awarded the films of 1976. Kind of looking at it, it was Network and Rocky were the big nominees that year with 10 nominations each. Then All the President's Men with 8. And then a movie, Bound for Glory, got 6, which is not streaming anywhere, so I didn't get a chance to see it. But, Julie, you said you've seen it before.
I had seen it in the theater, again, another little indie theater. And it was brilliant. And even though you understand who Woody Guthrie is, he is true Americana. He's the one that created this. He's the one that went through the Dust Bowl with these people and sang about their woes. But it was gritty and it was wonderful.
But the big winners for the night were All the President's Men and Network. Both got 4 awards. Rocky got 3 and Bound for Glory got 2. So I would say those are the big movies of the Oscars that year.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through the big 8 categories and we'll kind of give our little commentary on what we think about this. So first up, we have Best Adapted Screenplay. First up, the winner, All the President's Men. The other nominees were Bound for Glory, Fellini's Casanova, The 7% Solution, and Voyage of the Damned. Now, I've only seen All the President's Men.
Me too. Oh.
So that's my winner.
We win.
Oh, Voyage of the Damned was from 76.
I guess so.
That's interesting. I wonder if that was a remake. I'm not sure. But yes, I mean, obviously, well-deserved.
The movies, there's no wasted scenes.
No.
It's a nice, crisp script. And like you said earlier, of the movie's less than 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So they do a lot in a short amount of time, which would now would be like a 10-episode TV series.
Yeah.
And best original screenplay, we have Seven Beauties, Rocky, The Front, Cousin Cuisine, and the winner, Network, with the aforementioned Patty Chayefsky.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
which,
absolutely.
Undeniable. That's a fantastic script.
So good. I think the Rocky script was very good, too. He wrote it. Yeah, it was very good.
And he made the rule when the studio wanted to buy his script is he had to be the star of it.
Smart.
Because so, I don't think anybody could have done it but him.
I think so, too.
No. I really do.
I don't know. I don't even want to think about who they might have found to play that role.
No, it was him.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird revisiting it now because I can't get in the mind space of what it would have been like to see this guy who was in, what, Death Race 2000 and then this movie?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
All right. Then we have the best actress in a supporting role. Our winner was Beatrice Straight for Network.
Five minutes.
It's the shortest performance, right, to win, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely crazy.
The rest of the nominees was Jane Alexander in All the President's Men, Jodie Foster in Taxi Driver, Lee Grant in Voyage of the Damned, and Piper Laurie in Carrie.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one,
See,
too.
Maybe I would have given it to Piper Laurie, I think,
for
Carrie.
She was good, man.
The Oscars especially then didn't like giving to horror movies.
Oh, God no. God forbid.
Well, I don't know if it's true, but this is what I read about Piper Laurie's performance in that movie. She thought the script was comedy.
Oh, that's so funny.
And honestly, rewatching it, I could see it.
Otherwise, Jodie Foster would have been a fine winner too, I think.
Who won?
Beatrice Straight.
Oh, that's right. Beatrice Straight. Yep.
Because this was the huge Network acting year where they almost won all 4 awards, which no movie's done before.
No.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think ever will at this point. But
I agree.
Probably not.
So let's go into Best Actor in a Supporting Role. We got Burt Young in Rocky, Laurence Olivier in Marathon Man, Burgess Meredith, also from Rocky, Ned Beatty for Network, and Jason Robards, who was the winner for All the President's Men.
They could have given it to a couple of those.
Yeah. I think any one of them could have gotten
it. I agree with you.
That's
Ned Beatty, yes, you bet.
And it would have been super cool if Ned Beatty would have won because then Network would have got all 4.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm not mad what Jason Robards getting.
No, he was wonderful.
So and he's very brief in the movie and he doesn't have any like showy scenes.
No, he's just getting the job done.
And he's just so good.
That's right.
I think I would give it to Laurence Olivier for Marathon Man because Dr. Christian Slezel is such a all-time villain performance.
I watched that movie again during this time when we were talking about 76.
Is it safe?
And I had just read that book and I clapped the book shut and I go, this has got to be a vehicle for Dustin Hoffman.
Oh,
really?
I did.
Wow.
Because I had seen him in The Graduate, mm-hmm. and he did one other role. But anyway, I digress.
I just wanted one thing about, we probably will talk about Marathon Man in October, but I just want to give this little tidbit of Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier's working relationship, where Dustin Hoffman's character was supposed to be like up for 3 days. So he actually did that. And Laurence Olivier is like, have you just tried acting, my boy?
That is so, as my mom and I like to call him, Larry Olivier, who could never be a Larry.
No.
Well, Heather, who'd you pick?
I think maybe the best supporting actor from Rocky. What's his name?
Burgess Meredith. Or Burt.
Oh, Burt, I think. Well, although I love Burgess Meredith, but yes, Burt Young.
So let's go into best actor in a leading role. We've got Sylvester Stallone for Rocky, William Holden for Network, Giancarlo Giannini for Seven Beauties, and Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver, and the winner was Peter Finch for Network.
Posthumously.
Yep.
Posthumously. Yeah. And do you think with the Academy Award, we know that it's that kind of an organization, that they did it because of that? Because I almost think Rocky should have won.
Really?
I mean, Sylvester Stallone. Oh. I love Peter Finch in this. And I loved it because it's a satire. It was an exaggeration of a person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I would never say that usually.
I think Peter Finch won because of the I'm as mad as hell scene.
No, yeah.
And I think the Academy Awards at that time, if you gave like one big scene like that, they were going to reward you for it.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I would probably give the award to William Holden for Network.
I agree.
Because the movie is just terrific.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or Robert De Niro would have been my other choice. Because rewatching it, I hadn't seen it since college.
Oh.
But rewatching it, he is just terrific in it.
Yeah. No words.
It's a very strong nominee list.
Yeah. Yes, and nail-biting, frankly. Yeah.
Well, and we know that they're lasting films, right? I mean, a lot of these...
Here we are 50 years later.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them are still, you know, very film 101 sort of movies.
Good call. It's true.
And then we got Best Actress in a Leading Role. We've got Liv Ullmann for Face to Face, which that's a Bergman movie, Ingrid.
Yes.
Sissy Spacek for Carrie, Talia Shire for Rocky, Marie-Christine Barut for Cousin Cousine. I'm just going to let you say it. And then our winner, Faye Dunaway for Network. I think, Faye Dunaway.
Sure.
I'm not mad about that.
I like Talia Shire too, but I'm not mad. I'm not mad about it. No, I'm mad's, a bridge too far, but she deserved it.
I'm going to slightly disagree and say I think it should have gone to Sissy.
Oh,
I like that you took that stand, girl.
Yeah, I think she was absolutely fantastic in that movie, especially watching it again. Just her face and the physical acting alone, she was so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was almost 30 playing a 16 or 17 year old. Yep. Yeah, she's so good.
Well, but what I love about Faye Dunaway is she nails that character of career first person.
Yes.
That, you know, it's a really strong performance when like the wrong people take all like the wrong ideas from a character.
Yes.
And other people are like, what is with this person? Like, you know, you did a good job when you've got both sides of the coin.
Right.
Looking at you. And
well, that you're a 3D character.
Yeah. All right. Then we got Best Director. We've got Lena Wertmuller for Seven Beauties, Sidney Lumet for Network, Ingmar Bergman for Face to Face, Alan J. Pakula for All the President's Men, and John G. Avildsen, who directed Rocky, who was the winner of that year.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
No, Sidney Lumet for Network. But so Rocky was the big winner for directing, which kind of surprised me because I don't know any other John Avildsen's movies.
I'm trying to think. Did I write one down?
Do you have a list?
Yeah, he made the Karate Kid franchise, the first three films. He made Joe, which is a very interesting, new
movie.
Hollywood movie.
I don't think I've seen that.
Save the Tiger, which got Jack Lemmon his first Oscar.
Yep. Oh. And that was a brilliant movie.
And then Lean on Me.
Oh,
then
sure.
Then he came back for Rocky V. Yeah, that seems to be the
rest
big
is history.
Ones. Yeah.
Wow.
I would have probably given it to Pelucola for All the President's Men or Lumet for Network.
I would go with Network, I guess.
I would go with All the President's Men.
And then finally, the Best Picture nominees, which may be in contention for the best group of nominees for like
a long time
of an average ratio, with Taxi Driver, Network, Bound for Glory, All the President's Men, and Rocky, which Rocky ended up winning Best Picture. But I, even though I haven't seen Bound for Glory, I wouldn't have been mad if any of them would have gotten.
I wouldn't either. But here's what I truly believe, that there wasn't a chance in hell that the Academy was going to give it to Taxi Driver. It was just too dark at that time.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised they nominated it for Best Picture.
Me too, because now it would win if it was played today.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of dark stuff that are nominated now. Now we've got 10 films to choose from, but yeah.
So, okay, let's play this little experiment. Let's say they had the 10 movie rule for this year. What would you think the other five should be?
Oh, boy.
I think of first one, Carrie should have been probably nominated for Best Picture.
Again, with the Academy.
It would have been cool if The Killing of a Chinese Bookie would have been nominated, but that was never going to happen.
Probably not going to happen. Yeah.
I feel like if it would have been the same Academy voters today, The Omen would have gotten.
Omen was so good.
Gregory Peck.
Yes.
And Lee Remick, who is underrated, although not really, is she? She won for Days of Wine and Roses, which, have you ever seen that?
I haven't.
Yes.
Beautiful.
With also Jack Lemmon.
Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah.
The Silver Streak, which... absolutely love that movie because it's so stupid.
I haven't seen it in years and years.
You know what else? I don't know that it should be on a best movie, but I remember seeing this, and that's Car Wash. Richard Pryor, George Carlin, so many people. And it's one of those movies that you quote from. So there's that.
I think I saw it when I was really little. It was on TV, and I have like a weird, vague recollection of it. But
Marathon Man. We've talked about, I love that movie, Assault on Precinct 13. I wouldn't mind included The Man Who Fell to Earth, but that's just me.
Yeah, do you think it would have been nominated?
I think I was too weird for the nomination.
Way too weird. See, they didn't do dark and they didn't do weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another one that came out that year, should we just go into movies that
just
we like? Okay, so Mikey and Nikki.
There you go.
Starring John Cassavetes and Peter Falk.
Those guys were the three amigos, man. Yeah, it's a brilliant movie.
I also shout out Assault on Precinct 13. It's one of my favorite John Carpenter movies.
Yeah.
And I love it because it's so inspired by Rio Bravo. Heartworn Highways.
Love that movie.
Terrific movie. So do we have any final thoughts for 1976?
Movies worth watching, boy.
Absolutely. Movies worth watching. Movies worth discovering.
Yeah, and those of you who haven't seen all these, Heather went on a kind of a fun adventure.
I did.
You're kind of a movie nerd.
Yeah, I saw most of them. I rewatched a bunch, though. I did, too. Network, All the President's Men, Rocky, Taxi Driver.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I've seen Taxi Driver more than once. And again, I saw all these movies in the theater because that was my thing.
But I'm excited to visit the horror movies later this year.
Absolutely.
I think that'll be super fun. This was a special presentation on the films of 1976, part of our celebration of the 50th birthday of KAXE, which also started in 1976. Tune in this October as we'll reunite the KAXE, KBXE Film Brain Trust to talk about the horror films of 1976. So be on the lookout for that. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
For listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
when I think just 15 years ago, looking at Native literature, I could name all the authors, all the big authors of the late 20th century and the early 21st century. Now we're seeing this huge explosion in Native publishing. I want to see Native American literature as a field grow and to really take its place as it should among the great literatures, right, that are studied.
Buju, Anin, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lem. Migwech for joining us. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests